Representative Williams and Representative Hercher and Representative Barnhart. Today we have some members, one absent, excused today in his district, and I think Representative Hass will be here late. He's up in his district, and I think Representative Farr is in his district, and Representative Berger went to get her glasses. So we're around. I just apologize for the slow start here.
We'll be a quorum in just a minute.
We'll be a quorum in a minute. Yeah, but we'll do this in public hearing anyway to get started. We have Representative Krummel. You made it earlier than you thought you might.
I did.
Why don't you come forward? I tell you what, since you've got some amendments. Representative Berger just came in without a quorum. Let's go into work session. Just for the purpose of receiving testimony and your amendments. Well, I'm not planning on working anything today, and I also have sign-ups from George Lanning and Rob. Well, I guess you're bringing the Sherwood people with you, aren't you?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay.
If that's all right.
Mr. Lanning in a minute. Let's welcome Representative Krummel and his guests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Jerry Krummel, State Representative of the House.
I'm sorry. Did I say what we're opening a work session on? Okay. 8:19, and let's go ahead and do 5:50 altogether again so we can just talk about the whole thing. Okay.
Minor detail. thank you, Mr. Chair. And the purpose of being here today is to introduce to you some amendments to Dash A7, and I think you should have a copy of them. My office did give a copy to the administrator earlier yesterday. Good. The Dash A7s would create a high-growth grant, and the purpose for doing this is that we have some districts in our state, Mr. Chair, that have been sort of victims of their own success, if you will. They have had a tremendous amount of growth in their districts. And in the case of Sherwood, not only have they had they've sort of had this negative confluence, because there's been over the course of the last 10 years, they not only have been flat funded under equity, but they have been negatively funded. And what I mean by that is that every year for the last 10 years, the amount of money that they were getting on a per student basis was actually declining. It wasn't held flat like it has been for other districts. It was actually declining. And so the other aspect or the problem that Sherwood has had is that they've had an increase in the number of students, and it's been a very dramatic increase. Over the last 10 years, they have grown an average of about 4% per year. So you can see what kind of an issue this has created for them. So what the Dash A7 amendments do, and I'm going to ask Dr. Rob Saxton and Connie Hansen to sort of address this a little bit on a local level. But what the A7s do is that it sets up, you'll notice on line 3 of page 1, $675 per ADM for a district that had from the prior fiscal year. And it would also, in line 5, it describes that the grant is if they have had a growth of 5 prior fiscal years of 4% or more. So it's a very steep grade for a district to meet, but I think that sure it's very possible that Sherwood is not the only district that would meet this requirement. I could see Salem Kaiser being a district that potentially meets it, Beaverton potentially meets it. But what the purpose is to make sure that they're not negatively funded at a time when they're growing by astronomical leaps and bounds. So with that, I just wanted to introduce this, and I'm going to turn it over. I'll stay here to answer questions, Madam Chair, and I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Saxton and Connie so that they can kind of discuss the issues a little bit more, how it relates to Sherwood.
Thank you, Representative Krummel. My apologies for the interruption here. I thought I was the one that was supposed to leave, and so we got a little confused, and it was the chair.
So you kicked the chair out of the day. Okay.
So excuse the little frivolity there. It was kind of funny. All right, we were listening to you.
No problem.
Yes, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you. My name is Rob Saxton. I'm the superintendent of the Sherwood School District, and thank you for giving us an opportunity to speak to you today. The Sherwood School District actually in 1992 funded on a per student basis students at 51-51. We have never reached that number again since 1992. Our per student funding allocation projection last year in the spring was 51-81. It would have been the first time that we would have received more per student than we actually were able to levy before ballot measure 5 was passed. And so we actually have received less per student over the last decade. And I think that's fairly unusual. In fact, I don't know if there's anybody else in the state that has that situation. I would tell you that Sherwood is the lowest funded or the lowest spending school district in the state, and I have in my hands actually a report from the State Audits Division that shows that last year the Sherwood School District spent $6,077 per student, and that the state average last year was $7,257 per student. It's almost $1,200 per student less that Sherwood spends than the state average. The highest spending school district in the state was over $33,000 per student, and yet we're averaging, we spent last year $6,077 per student. And in fact, the next closest school district spent $125 more per student than Sherwood did. That's the next closest in spending. So we do have an issue. We are the lowest funded school district in the state. And part of the reason for that, quite honestly, is that there is absolutely nothing about the state school funding formula that favors Sherwood. If you take a look at our district, there isn't anything in the factor. One of the things with a high-growth district like ours is that we're out hiring new staff because we're growing. And when you do that, you obviously hire some younger, less experienced teachers often. So just one part of the funding formula would be the average teacher experience in our district, which is 4 years less than the state average. So I believe the state average is about 13.8, and Sherwood is about 9.8. And for every year under the state average in teacher experience, you receive $25 less per student. And so 4 years less per average is $100 less per student. And that's just one of any number of factors, but you can look at anything that would add additional factors in the funding formula, and we don't have it. We're one of the few districts in the state that's under the 11% cap on special ed identification. We're about 2.3% ELL. We have about a 9 or 10% poverty rate. And so I know that there are a lot of people that would say, well, you're lucky. You have the easiest kids in the state to educate, and therefore it probably doesn't take that much extra money to do it. But I guess what I would tell you is that the cost of doing business, the cost of diesel fuel, the cost of electricity, the cost of teacher salary, those things are all relatively the same across the state. And so there is a minimum amount of money that it takes per student to adequately fund a school district, and I would argue that we don't get that in Sherwood. We are a high-growth district. Our district, I want to talk a little bit about the geography of our district. I know that some people here appreciate that, particularly Representative Williams. But our district actually stretches to the far side of I-5. If you know where the Wilsonville Holiday Inn is, that's actually in the Sherwood School District, and is as is some land on the other side of I-5. Then we run out to the Beaverton and Hillsborough School Districts, north to King City, and south to Newburgh. And if you think about the state in a high-growth area, we are in the heart of it. Our community, just the community of Sherwood, which is different than the geographic boundaries of the Sherwood School District, but our community was 3,000 people in 1992. We're currently 14,000 people. So in 11 years, the increase really is quite phenomenal. Our school district has gone from 1,200 students to about 3,600 students ADMW for next year.
Say that number again, please.
3,600, that's ADMW, so it's weighted. We're actually going to be about 3,490.
Both numbers, please.
1,200, 3,490, and that would be real students. So we've really experienced pretty extraordinary growth, and we're going to continue to experience extraordinary growth. I have, if you'd like a copy, an executive summary of a demographic report that we had completed last December that indicates that our district is projected to be 4,353 students in 2007. That would be an increase of 29.9% over the next 5 years. And so we continue to grow quickly, and I think we will continue. And part of the, you know, part of the issue is that Sherwood proper, the city, has some control over growth. But in our area, it really is Metro that makes some determinations about what kind of growth we're going to experience. And if you take a look on the west side of I-5 and talk about the exception lands, Metro just brought about $400 into our urban growth boundary area within our school district. It's been proposed. I think there's a little bit of challenge, but it's some of the land that will come in. So it'll be about an additional 400 acres that's slated for residential property. And so we're going to continue to grow. I think those things will start to build in the next 4 or 5 years, and yet we're still developing land that is in the area. And if you look on the west side of I-5, there is more exception land on the metro map within the Sherwood School District on the west side of I-5 than there is in all other school districts combined on the west side of I-5. That includes Beaverton, Hillsboro, Tiger, Tualatin, Forest Grove. We are slated for extraordinary growth in the future as well. And I think that's important for people to recognize. I know that there are a lot of people who would say, well, there's some virtues to growth because you're not having to cut your budget. And there is some truth to that, although I will tell you that we've grown by over 400 students in the last 3 years, and we have fewer staff in every staffing category. We have fewer administrators now, and we're projected next year to have fewer administrators than we had 3 years ago. We have fewer teachers. And we have fewer classified staff, which include people like, you know, custodians, secretaries, and so on and so forth. And so we actually have, and the reason is because we have fewer dollars than we had previously on a per-student basis. One of the things that that challenges us with is local option. Let me make my explanation about that. We have two bonds that were passed because we've had extraordinary growth. We passed a bond in 93 and another in 98. And with our growth, we actually are going to outgrow our schools in 2006. We've just completed a number of construction projects last year that add on to the high school and the middle school and built a new elementary school. But we need to be out for another bond probably in 2004 if we're going to get anything built by 2007. And so we're actually going to be a year beyond our capacity. Our elementary schools are built for 600. Archer Glen Middleton Elementary will be 800 students in 2006. And yet we don't feel like we can go out for a bond right now because we need to be out for a local option. When we talk about going out for a local option, we don't think that our local taxpayers can support both. If you think about a town that has and an area that has the extraordinary growth that we have, our level of bonded indebtedness is extraordinary. We have a new police station, a new library, a new YMCA, and two school bonds. And there are other things slated because of the kind of growth that we've experienced. Our bonded indebtedness is $258,000 on bonds. We need to be back out for about another $2, which would generate $48 million to build some additional buildings that we're going to need to have. Really, we should have them completed by 2006, but it's going to be closer to 2008, 2009. If we go out for a local option for 99 cents a thousand, it generates $1 million for our budget. And we don't think that we can go out for a 3 or 4 or 5 year serial levy when we're going to have to be right back out for some bonds. And so that's a real problem because there is a level at which point local taxpayers are going to say, we can't support that. Furthermore, we have some extraordinary costs in our district due to high growth. I think a really classic example is our sixth grade class next year at our middle school is going to be 60 larger than any preceding sixth grade class. We need to buy, just by one example, we need to buy health textbooks, math textbooks, science textbooks, English textbooks for those 60 students because we haven't had that many students there in the past. We also need to buy 60 more desks, 60 more areas for people to sit in the cafeteria because we've never had that big a class before, and that will continue all the way through our current kindergarten enrollment. If you look at our class, each succeeding class is larger than the one preceding it. And so we're always into replacement of all kinds of materials, supplies, textbooks, teaching materials, and, you know, just places for kids to sit. And so it is expensive for us to do business. I know that there are some who would argue, well, you're getting to grow, and so you're not having to cut back, which isn't true. We have had to cut back. But certainly, more students bring in more money, and that's absolutely accurate. But I would tell you the amount of money that we're slated to receive and that we have been receiving, but particularly that we're slated to receive next year of about $4,700 per student, is inadequate for a student. We cannot offer the kind of education that a student deserves on $4,700 a student. And so with every student that we grow, we actually gain 1x of inadequacy. It does not help us to grow. We simply become more inadequate. If $4,700 is inadequate, we just get more inadequate when more kids show up. We are going to we've increased every year, as I said, for the last 3 years, about 400 students, and we have fewer staff than we had 3 years ago. So we've absorbed those kids simply by having larger class size and cutting programs that do not involve class size, like elementary PE, elementary music, media specialists, those kinds of things. And so we simply become less adequate. It would be very helpful to pass a bill like this, or amendment like this, 8-A7, to help us deal with those issues. Are there any questions?
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I actually have several on different topics, and I'm really trying to understand
Certainly.
Sherwood, which is why I'm asking them. In sort of the third of the way through your testimony, you indicated that there is a minimum amount needed per student to fund a school district. Do you have an idea of what that is?
When we were at in the last session, when the number was $5.2 billion, we were slated to receive $51.81 per student, and we didn't think that that was particularly adequate, but it would be a lot better than the $4,700 we're slated to receive for next year.
You're not prepared to give an adequacy number, but it's something higher than that.
It is, and I guess my argument here today is that the statement that I'm making, it isn't necessarily the argument I'm making here, but the statement that I'm making is that the funding formula has all kinds of exceptions now. There's small, remote, there's transportation, there's all kinds of exceptions out there because we've recognized that people aren't able to fund their schools based on the circumstances that they face, small and remote school districts. I'm saying here that Sherwood is not able to adequately fund either because we, too, have a very special circumstance. I don't know if I've answered your question. But what I would say is that 5181 was not adequate. It would take more than that, and it isn't necessarily a virtue of what school districts would get across the state. It's that because we're a high-growth district, we have some special situations that cause us, and because of the way the funding formula is set up and the fact that we don't have anything that would generate or favor us in the funding formula, that the amount is particularly inadequate for Sherwood.
Okay. A couple other follow questions. Up. Actually, these are different topics. Do you qualify for capital matching funds at all? You probably don't. You probably have too much value in the district.
I'm not aware of exactly what capital matching funds are.
Then you probably don't qualify.
If we do and I don't know, I bet I'm in trouble at home.
Okay. A couple more, if I may, and sure. On a different topic. You're talking about each cohort getting larger than the earlier one, starting next year's sixth graders.
With the kindergartners. Every year's kindergarten when we do our demographic studies, we look back and say, what are the birth rates in our zip code? And it increases every year. Every succeeding year, the class will be larger than the previous.
Each younger cohort is bigger than the
Absolutely.
Cohort before. I think we're saying the same thing.
Yes.
Okay. Do you find that you keep that you're holding these kids, or do some of these families tend to move to more established neighborhoods and districts as their families get older, and therefore your high school may be a little bit less stressed in the future than the elementary school is now? You understand the question?
Yeah, I understand very well, yeah. It's a great question, and we don't know the answer to that yet because we're such a young community, it hasn't happened.
Yeah.
But right now it looks like we're holding those students. In fact, if we took the kids that are kindergarten 3, we have an 800-student high school right now. If we take the kids that are kindergarten through 3 and put them in the high school, we need a high school for 1,400 students.
Okay.
If we just roll those kids forward. And so we think that we're a fabulous community and we have a great school district, and we think that those people are going to stay. And maybe Connie can answer that question a little bit better. She has students in our school district. 48% of the homes in Sherwood have children under age 18. That's the highest in the state.
How much?
48%.
Okay. Last question. How are you paying for these hard assets you need that you mentioned, desks and books and room in the cafeteria and all of that? How are you paying for that now?
Mm-hmm.
Is that coming out of operating funds, or are you taking it out of something else?
When we did our last, there's a couple answers to that question. When we did our last building, there were some dollars that were available. I need to come up with the facility dollars, facility grant dollars. And I think that it was set to receive as much as 8%, but it ended up being 3 or 4% or something like that because there was so much building that occurred in the state at that time. But we did have some facility grant dollars. We did set some of those aside to make some of those kinds of purchases. And we did that, but it's been, we received those dollars about, well, 3 years ago and then 2 years ago, and most of those have been spent. And because those dollars really were inadequate, we have used operating dollars to make those purchases.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Hanson? Is it Hanson?
It is Hanson. Yes. Thank you. I'm Connie Hanson, and I'm here today to support SB 819-A7, the amendment proposed by Representative Crummell. I'm a parent in the Sherwood School District. I also organize Sherwood United for Schools, and we were here, about 350 to 400 of us, 2 weeks ago on April 24th, which was one of our cut days. Our district's been forced to cut 7 days from the school year, and that was the third of seven. We have another one next Wednesday, another, and then three at the end of the year. And I think that the turnout that we had was remarkable for our community, and it demonstrates our commitment to public education in Sherwood and how important it is to us. With 48% of our households having children under 18, it is the issue for our community. Last night I attended our budget meeting. Our district is facing with the co-chair's budget of $1.788 billion for K-12. $1.3 million in cuts to our district. That's on top of over $1 million in cuts that we made at the beginning of this school year. We've seen a constant erosion of dollars into our district, and we're now cutting things that we consider essential. Elementary PE. My children are, I have two boys, one in first grade and one in third grade. We attend Middleton Elementary School. The importance of this amendment to our district can't be overstated. The growth in our district is disabling to us in many ways, where on one hand it perhaps does help us. On the other hand, it's a two-edged sword, and it is very difficult for us to keep up with the type of growth. Last night at our budget meeting, there were over 100 people there in support of a local option tax levy. I worked on the committee 3 years ago for a local option tax levy. It failed by a narrow margin. One of the reasons it failed, or maybe perhaps the largest reason it failed, is we had just passed an additional bond in our district to build Middleton Elementary School and remodel the high school, the middle school, and our oldest elementary school, Hopkins, which was built in the 50s, to accommodate the continued and ever-present growth in Sherwood. It was very difficult for a community to go out and support a levy for operating funds. It was a lot to ask, and it was difficult. We couldn't get it passed. Last night, once again, we're facing, since the 3 years have passed, we have faced cuts and cuts and more cuts. It is not a reflection on Sherwood that we didn't pass the levy. It doesn't say that we don't support schools. We do, in a very big way. I think there's $2.58 per thousand on our tax rolls right now for bonds. We're talking about going out for 99 cents per thousand to generate $1 million in revenue and operating revenue. And we need more than that. We're concerned that we can't go out for more. I mean, I think the state would allow us, the law would allow us to go out for $1.58 per thousand, and we're only considering 99, and it's only $1 million, and we're facing $1.3 million this year in funding, and that doesn't give us the ability to make up for some of the cuts we made last year or to accommodate for some of the growth. It would be helpful to us. We know we're going to go out for another bond in the next few years. Ideally, we would do that in 2004. We probably will choose not to do that. It would be very difficult if we ask people for operating levy money in September, and we're doing that at a time where we have to make a double majority. But we need the money desperately for the next school year. If we wait till November in a general election where we don't have to make a double majority, the monies wouldn't be available until the 2004 school year, and that's not soon enough. My children, as I said, are in the Middleton school. Middleton's at 600 students right now. We're only 3 years old. It was built to hold 600. Most of us know that an elementary school operates best. It provides the best educational environment for children at less than 600 students. I mean, 600's a lot. Our staff, our teachers, our administrators do an incredible job of educating 600 kids in one building. We're talking about possibly having over 800 students in that building before we can build another elementary school. We're bursting at the seams. We're also talking about eliminating programs. A librarian, a PE teacher, it was considered a music teacher. These are fundamental educational opportunities that my kids will not experience. The growth is a unique situation for us. The funding formula doesn't address that. There is no mechanism. We don't even have the ability to impose system development charges to help build schools. That's been denied to us, and in our district, that is huge. The amount of growth we've seen, I moved to Sherwood in 1992 when it was a community of about 4,000 people. And the growth is just explosive. It's incredible. It does contribute to the vitality of our community, but it presents huge obstacles for us to educate our kids. We don't have the ability to use that growth to help our district. The schools are not allowed to do that. We're looking at 400 more acres that have just been brought in the urban growth boundary. They're going to be developed, and again, we're forced to just react to that, to try to take that kind of growth and somehow provide schools and education for students, and without SDCs, we have no ability to help offset some of the benefits we receive from that high growth. So I'm here today to ask you to support Mr. Crummell's amendments, -87. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hanson. Are there any questions for either one of these folks? Well, let me just say that I'm a little envious coming from a district where they've all moved to Sherwood. and they've taken with them their young children and the vitality of your community. That does not minimize your problems with high growth. I think the one thing that is so perplexing to me, and people here have heard me say it many times, and that is that a cookie-cutter approach is not going to work in Oregon. Sherwood is not Reedsport or North Bend or Coos Bay, where declining enrollment. The superintendent from North Bend called me yesterday. He's losing 112 students just suddenly, and that is just devastating to them to lose that kind of revenue. So we have these dire circumstances that are at either end of the spectrum, but we can't minimize either one of them, because they both present terrible problems in the community. So I greatly appreciate your being here today, and you also, Representative Crummell.
Madam Chair, thank you very much for the time of the committee in addressing this. These amendments actually would fit in either Senate Bill 550 or 819. The amendments that you've been presented with are the -A7s for Senate Bill 819. And I would just point out, if I may, very quickly, there are flaws in the funding formula. We know that, particularly with high growth needs, there's a definite flaw in how that occurs. And the amendments, the A7s, establish a very high bar. And I recognize that it's a very high bar, but when there are extraordinary growth factors, this is a way that we can meet part of that demand on the part of the state for these school districts. So I certainly hope that the committee will give a strong consideration and will adopt the A7 amendments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Colonel. All right.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Oh, you have a question?
Yes, I do. Actually, it's of Steve. Steve, do you have an idea how many schools would, in fact, be able to participate in the process in the A7s?
I have only identified one, and that's Sherwood. There's other districts that have a growth rate higher than 4%, but to have it over the 5 years is what drops the amount.
Thank you.
Thank you. That does trigger a question for me, if I may. Superintendent, you expect this growth rate to continue into the foreseeable future, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I mean, it's 4% or more.
Right. Our I think I gave you, you were passed out a copy of the latest demographic report, and the indication would be that we would increase in growth by, it's about 30% over the next 5 years, and so we would average about 6% per year, and I think that this is sort of the lull that is going to be experienced because of the urban growth boundary situation. With the 400 acres additional coming in, and you know, with the metro rules around density, we're talking a whole bunch of houses on 400 acres. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is sort of, this 5 years is going to be the slow part of growth. This 30% increase is going to be the slowest that we've experienced in 10 years, and I think it will be slower than what we're going to experience in the 10 years after that.
You're on the shockwave of the growth, of the population growth in the Tri-County area, aren't you?
We are.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you again. All right. Next, we have George Lanny. Welcome to the committee.
Well, good morning. I'm George Lanning, the executive director for the Oregon Small Schools Association, and we represent the small school districts, basically less than 1,650 students throughout the state of Oregon. And this morning I just wanted to informally at least address the Senate Bill 550, and particularly that portion dealing with the transportation issues. That would benefit a lot of our rural and remote small districts. Here a couple weeks ago, I had the opportunity to travel throughout Harney and Malheur counties. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I really have a new appreciation for all of the small schools in that region of the state. I looked at the list that was completed by the Legislative Revenue Office, at least on the school transportation grant. And I guess, you know, one of my I thought about was particularly on Double O. I went out to Double O, and after you left the Hardball, you drove out another 18 miles on gravel and rock road just to get to the school. And they have four students. And I think that's probably our smallest one in the state. Mm-hmm. But one teacher school for a K-8, and then they send their high school students off to train to the boarding school or whatever. Now, it may not seem like much, but the Senate Bill 550 Alpha 8 becomes... amounts to a gain for them of $1,155. Doesn't amount to much, but at the same time, that one-room school, that teacher, provides for the education. They're the building principal and the custodian and everything else associated with that school. Out at one of our small schools, and they said they got a call from an entity, and they wanted to talk to their security person. And it was interesting because said, well, that's me, okay, and it also the teacher and the principal and everything else. And well, what do you have for security in place? And said, well, we've got a fence around the school to keep the cows and out, but that was about it. But anyhow, just wanted to address that a little bit. When I was down in Fields, they send their students 120 miles, now from school to school, 120 miles from Field to Crane, one way, to send their high school students there. And they still go on down south of that to the Nevada border. Out of A-Rock, we had some students traveling from that district, which borders McDermott, which is actually in Nevada, but they come up into Oregon. We have some students there just a little less than 200 miles one way up to Crane. So there are some really rural and remote areas, and it's not the best of best of roads, at least. Also in connection with that is the high-cost special ed, and I know that, you know, a lot of that will, in fact, go into the metro area and so on like that, or more of the urban districts where they provide the hospitals and, you know, those type of facilities that we don't have out in some of the rural and remote areas. However, that is a statewide issue, and the children may live in those districts, but in fact, parents may still reside out in various locations throughout the state. If we have one of those high-needs children in one of our rural districts, in fact, it could virtually bankrupt a school district. And so I look at that as a insurance policy, at least for our districts, and something that even though it's going to limit what we would have between, as I understand it, between the 11% cap and above, as far as overall revenues, it would provide an insurance policy in the event that one of those high cost children were residing within the district. And I was a little bit surprised as I looked at the information that was over there this morning on the high cost special ed legislative revenue office run there, and to find the number of children that we actually have out in our small districts that in fact do exceed the $25,000 figure that Ozzie Rose discussed yesterday. But anyhow, I would speak in support of that bill, and that completes my testimony unless there's any questions.
All right. Are there any questions? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if this goes to George or again to Steve. In regard to Crane and their high costs, it's my understanding that the boarding costs actually come out of the transportation monies. Thank you. That was an affirmative.
Yes.
For you, George, affirmative. Then my next question, and I wonder if it would be possible to get some of the information as to distances these schools are from the next nearest school to get an idea if it's realistic that they be separated, or if this might fit into some of the discussion of potential consolidations or mergers. Is that information available?
Madam Chair, Representative Hobson, I do not have mileage's distances between various schools. Department of Education may have.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Lynn.
This is a follow-up, really, on that. Would this change in the transportation funding formula also apply to the boarding costs that the good Representative Hobson was referring to? Or do you know?
I believe so.
It would. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
George, I'm sorry I missed your testimony.
Oh, that's fine.
All right. Well, thanks.
Very good.
It was very good. We grade it. Okay. What are we doing? Patty, did you have something for us this morning? No, you don't. You don't.
No.
Tomorrow, perhaps.
Okay.
All right. And have we got anybody else then
today?
Steve, have you gone over your handouts?
I have not.
Why don't we do that, and then we can.
The amendment that you were just referring to, I believe, was the A-10 for Senate Bill 819.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they are available in your material. And we talked about the A-7 already.
We talked about the A-7.
The amendment yesterday that Ozzie Rose brought to you for Senate Bill 550A is not ready. I was told by Legislative Council that it should be out this afternoon if anybody wants an advance copy before tomorrow. I think we can make that available this afternoon.
Okay.
And then that leaves a couple of tables, potentially three, that I can talk to you about for a few minutes.
Please.
Let's talk about the high-cost special education one first for Senate Bill. Relates to Senate Bill 550, although I didn't put the bill number on the run. It's an estimated cost per student survey On the Senate side, we didn't have any information on high costs by district. The Department of Education requested the work of the Portland School District to survey the districts and come up with some information on the number of high-cost students and the range of costs for those students to provide some information to work with on a district-by-district basis. So that's what you have in that high-cost special education table. The threshold was set at $25,000, so the high cost per student to be included in this group had to be more, or at least $25,000. Wanted to share with you the distribution of those, and they were asked to list the number of students that fall into each of $5,000 increments up to $60,000 and then $60,000 and over. There's about 2,096 students were reported. Nine districts did not respond. About 81 districts had no high cost.
I'm just curious, Steve, on this sheet, do you distinguish between those that didn't respond and those that didn't have high costs?
No, those that did not respond have a zero.
Okay, and it's the same as the ones who did respond but don't have high costs.
Correct.
So, okay.
Between 25,000 and 30,000 out of the 2,096 total students, there were 1,338, so about 63% are in that first $5,000 increment. From 30,000 to 35,000, it was 320. From 35 to 40,000, 203. 40 to 45,000, 140. From 45 to 50, 31. 50 to 55, 28. And from 55 to 60, 12. And then more than 60, 24. So that you can see, it's very heavily weighted to the low end on the cost side for those students. Using that information, but you have first the total cost for those 2,096 students being about $66 million, or just over $31,000 per student. What I did then was to look at the cost with a $20,000 deduction that comes close to being what's in the bill. The bill has four times the general purpose grant per weighted student, and we don't know exactly what that's going to be until we know what the appropriation level is, but it should be close to about $5,000, a little bit less, and so four times that would be approximately $20,000. So you have a total eligible cost then of about $24 million. The grant money is $12 million, so it has to be prorated. And you can see that by district, and the average then would be about $5,700 for each of those high-cost students. With the $25,000 deduction that will be in the amendment proposed yesterday, the eligible cost drops significantly to about $13.5 million. The average stays the same.
Is that the average is because it's limited to $12 million?
Correct, and the same number of students.
Oh, darn.
But it does shift some money around among the districts, depending upon how the district's distribution of low high cost to high high cost plays out with that level of deduction. And that information then is available by district. So it's they are estimates. They should be fairly good. The districts were asked for costs based upon 02-03, so there wasn't any roll-up in those costs for 03-04.
So for districts that have a higher proportion of lower-cost students, their average per student would go down at the $20,000 deduction. For districts that have a higher proportion of more expensive students, does their average go, or is it the way around?
It's the other way around.
Oh, that's the way around.
Yeah. For those that have a lot of students in the $25,000, $30,000, $35,000, they tend to be better off at the $20,000 deduction.
Right.
Mm. Okay. And those that tend to have more students at the $40,000,
$50,000,
$60,000, a little bit better off at the $25,000 deduction.
Yep. That's what I think I was getting at.
Questions, Chair?
Representative Berger?
Steve, how many districts did you say did not respond?
Nine. Excuse me, nine.
If there were a significant number of students underrepresented, then all these numbers would shift because the $12 million stays the same.
Correct.
Okay.
And there of those nine, there was one fairly large district.
I'm looking. We've picked up Eugene. We've picked up Salem, Portland.
Yes.
So this student was not Corvallis.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, that's very good information. So this prepares us for the amendments we'll be looking at tomorrow.
Correct.
Okay.
The other table is the local often tax and tax excluded from school formula local revenue in 819A. This has to be used with caution, but I thought it was still
put that on here.
Perhaps helpful information. The what it tries to do is to give you some idea of the amount of local option that would be excluded under the limits, both current law and the proposal in Senate Bill 819 that increases that to $750 or 15%. But I started providing the information in the first column as to the size of the gap for districts. This is only a rough estimate of that gap because it's the numbers are from the Department of Revenue, but it's based upon calculation at the code area level, not the individual property level. So it probably overstates it. Even though it's for 0102, it might be a little bit closer for 0304, but probably still on the high side. The next column is just what districts have a local option and how much that local option was for 0203 in terms of the amount imposed. And then you have the current law and Senate Bill 819 exclusion limits. You can see that raising the exclusion limits in 819 increases the amount available. And it tends to be about $250 per weighted student. It will be, at the governor's funding level, it was $250. That was the lower of the two. This is at the co-chair's funding level, so a few districts fall below that $250 in terms of their increase. But it tries to give you an idea of what that amount excluded can be versus what the gap could be. And the dollar amounts associated with those exclusion limits by district.
So, for instance, looking at Gilliam County, Arlington, just to pick one, what this tells us is that under current law, the amount available to Arlington School District with a local option is 147,128.
With the local option, that would be the 81 in terms of their gap capacity.
Oh, okay. Well, but okay, the exclusion, but okay.
But 147 is the limit on the exclusion
right.
from local revenue in the formula.
So basically,
so they
increasing the limit doesn't help Arlington
no.
because they don't have a gap. Okay, that's how you read
yes.
it. Okay, that's. And then the third set of columns, the last set of columns just carries that forward into 0304, showing the 819 increase.
The last four columns
yeah.
on the
mm-hmm.
right are all for 0304.
Okay. So where is one then? Let's take a look at Multnomah or Portland. Do we see a...
Okay. You can see in Multnomah, again, the remaining gap about $14.6 million, again, being on the high side, but
mm-hmm.
with a local option of about $16 million. Combined, they are very close to their current exclusion limit
mm-hmm.
if they were making full use of their gap.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess I'm confused, Mr. Chair, about
mm-hmm.
the number under current law.
Okay.
Right, current law would be the amount that could be of local option that could be excluded.
That's the 10%
being the lesser
$500.
Of the 10%.
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
Oh, okay. All right. I got it.
So,
okay.
Mr.
Chair, yes, Representative Bernhardt.
It appears to me that there are at least two districts that are already flowing money into the formula.
Where are you looking?
I don't want to say the specific district number, but you find one on the first page
yes.
and one on the second page. If I've read the table correctly,
mm-hmm.
is that right?
So I don't The numbers may indicate that, but I don't think that's the case in reality. One, because of the local option number is probably the amount imposed and not collected.
Okay. Ah, so the collections are probably less than.
Yes, and secondly, the gap is overstated.
All right. I noticed that in the case of Eugene, which is the one I'm familiar with, which is not on that in that short list, by the way, they're not actually collecting anything like $5 million. It's more like about half that.
Yeah. So this is the imposed one.
Yeah, okay, collected. Good. All right. Anything else? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. You got one more. You said three.
I haven't seen the third.
Well, the third one hasn't been handed out.
That's why I haven't seen it.
In anticipation of the amendments for Senate Bill 550, I went ahead and prepared this table so you would have a chance to look at it before tomorrow. That's why there's no number for the amendment.
Okay, we're up to simulation 12.
Yeah, here we go.
Are you checking out their districts?
I'm thinking about yesterday's. Sorry. I was thinking about yesterday's festival.
Like a shot.
And compared to the chart we were just looking at, thinking, boy, oh, boy. But I think the explanation took care of it. In fact, I was wrong, and I'm glad I was wrong.
Steve.
Okay, simulation 12, school finance distribution for 03-04, with the proposed amendments to Senate Bill 550A being the $25,000 high-cost disability deduction, and at the co-chair's proposed appropriation for the state school fund. What I have done here is to, under current law, is to use the co-chair's funding level with the formula as it is today without any changes, being at $3,352,000,000 funding level of state and local revenue, $5,045 per weighted student. And for Senate Bill 550, you see under the high-cost disability column, the $12 million at the state total. And if you go down to those district numbers, you'll find those are the same as on the table that we just looked at. It also lists the extra or additional transportation dollars for the 38 districts that are the high-cost transportation districts at $1 million, and lists those so that you can see which districts they benefit. And then using those two changes to the formula, I recalculated the formula at the same funding level, the $3.3 billion. And so you can go down that list. The average doesn't change. It's still the same funding level, same number of students. But you can see then in the change column whether the district has additional formula revenue or less formula revenue and what that is per student. Now, you can tell looking at the first couple of lines for youth corrections and juvenile detentions, which don't have any high-cost disability or extra transportation dollars, that they lose about $20 per weighted student. So for the districts that don't benefit from either of the changes, there's about a $20 per weighted student loss.
Okay.
Then it's a matter for the other districts. They may benefit from the high-cost disability, but it may not be as much as what they lose overall, so that they may still show a small loss. And if the ones that show the most increase gain both on the high cost and the extra transportation dollar changes. So you can go through and kind of see what's driving the change in the formula revenue with the high cost disability and extra transportation.
Good
numbers there. I thought you would want to see that before tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm surprised. I would have guessed that Druzy would have picked up some money from transportation costs. You don't know about Druzy, do you?
No, I do not.
It's in Harney County. I don't either. I've never heard of it. But I figured if it was in Harney County, you'd probably have transportation costs. See?
That's right.
No. Uphill both ways.
In the snow.
Over there. Barefoot.
Barefoot, too. Okay, now that is very good information for tomorrow. Anything, Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the question will come up when people look at it more closely. and that's with the Neocone School District that takes an extremely high increase under this. And Steve, could you help me understand how that then works into the fact that they won't really receive a whole lot from the state formula?
Neocone's has typically been in a situation where local revenue is more than their formula allocation, so that they don't receive any state school funds.
Uh-huh.
With this change in the statute, let's see, I'm trying to find out which county.
Tillamook.
Okay. They would qualify for additional formula revenue. That I don't think that would probably put them in a situation where they would still get additional state school fund dollars, but
I don't think
it would, but it would probably be getting close.
Just to make sure I understand, you're saying that the property tax that they receive is enough so that they don't actually get any funds from the state?
Their property taxes, other local revenue, timber revenue, et cetera.
Oh, yes. Yeah, all of that together.
Right.
Okay. The basic formula funds without the state money already exceeds the amount that they would have gotten under the allocation.
Formula. Right. The local revenue is more than the formula amount.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you for pointing that out, Representative Hobson. Knowledgeable about Tillamook County Schools.
One other question.
Yeah.
Does that modify the rest of the table at all? Redistributing
that?
Yeah, redistributing those funds. Would that change any of these other numbers?
Not the way I've calculated.
Okay.
You've already allowed for that.
Okay.
Okay, anything else? Anybody? Only once, twice. Close the work session.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Homework. 5:15, and we're adjourned.
Yeah, we should have.